Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of the Canby Current. I am your host, James Walton. Let's read the news. There's a content warning for our listeners on this opening story. This story contains strong language and threats of physical violence. The mayor of Canby and a member of the Canby School Board are facing criticism this week after their apparent endorsement of a Facebook post threatening politically motivated violence. The original post appeared on the personal but publicly available Facebook page of a Canby resident and military veteran and seemed to reference the conspiracy theory that President Donald Trump's loss in the November election was the result of widespread fraud. Quote, "Is there someone in a position of actual authority who can make the decision that lethal force is required to reestablish liberty and return to constitutional government? Or do we just decide that on our own?" the post asked. Asking for everyone who's not a communist, China-owned, douchebag, leftard. Mayor Brian Hansen responded to the post with a heart or love reaction. Stephanie Carlson, a member of the Canby School Board, liked the post and said, "Read your comment aloud and everyone in my house loves everything you say." At the time, the residence page featured several other threatening posts, including two GIFs from the beginning of the 1993 Michael Douglas film Falling Down, in which the main character goes on a deadly rampage after experiencing a series of wrongs, inconveniences, and societal abuses. "The Calm Before the Storm," read one caption, showing the character in an early scene before he snaps, and another one read, "We are now here. Wait for it." All three posts have since been taken down. A screenshot of the January 5th post was shared on social media Tuesday, drawing criticism and concern from the community. At least two residents, both members of the Canby City Council, reported the post to the Canby Police Department. Now Hear This, Canby reached out to Hodson and Carlson, as well as the Canby School District and other council members for comment. "I would never wish for unnecessary, excessive, or lethal force to be used against anyone," Hodson said in a statement. "I do not condone the events that occurred last week at our state and nation capitol buildings. That being said, legal force is sometimes necessary to maintain law and order. Elected officials, including my fellow counselors, use social media for personal reasons, and oftentimes false assumptions and accusations are made." Carlson said she, too, is opposed to violence and did not mean for her comment to suggest otherwise. "I do not support violence and have been a vocal critic of the violent protests," she said. "My Facebook reply to his comment was directed at what I perceived to be his question about constitutional authority, not his exact choice of words." On Wednesday, Canby Superintendent Tripp Goodall responded to the original post as well as Carlson's apparent comment in support. "It is never acceptable to call for violence or to use targeted language that may be offensive," Goodall said. "After the events of January 6th in our nation's capital, all of us should recognize the importance of our words." He said Carlson's apparent comment of support strays far from the intent of the Canby School District's established civility policy, which is meant to foster a safe and inclusive learning environment. Any district leader or staff member who does not share the same commitment does not represent our values and should evaluate why they choose to represent our district, our staff, our students, and our community. Counselor Greg Parker said he was disturbed and confused when he saw the post and the mayor's reaction to it, and said he forwarded it to the city attorney and the chief of police for their review to determine if it meets the threshold of inciting violence. "I was stunned and disappointed when this was brought to my attention," said Counselor Sarah Spoon. "This is inconsistent with our statement for a safe community and our values. It hurts our plan to build a vibrant town. My first concern is the safety of people in Cambie, and I forwarded the post to the police department." Counselor Sean Varwig said he does not condone any manner of violence and was saddened to see what took place in the nation's capital this week, as well as the violence that has plagued many areas of the country in recent months and even years. "I won't pretend to understand why the mayor used the love reaction to the comment, and I have not spoken to him about it," Varwig said. "What I do know is that it's easy to misunderstand intent on social media, and I'm hopeful that this is just a misunderstanding. I've always known the mayor to be an honest and caring person with Cambie's best interests at heart. In politics, we'll never all agree, but I do think at the end of the day that he would abhor any such violence as much as the rest of us." The new chair of the Clackamas County Commission has joined the growing chorus, calling for one of her colleagues to resign over a series of social media posts that equated Islam with radical terrorism and made other statements deemed anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, and anti-LGBTQ. Clackamas Chair Tootie Smith issued a statement Wednesday calling on her fellow newly elected colleague, Commissioner Mark Scholl, to resign immediately, quote, "in support of the greatest good of the citizens of Clackamas County." Smith had issued a strongly worded statement Tuesday calling Scholl's alleged Islamophobic and xenophobic posts offensive, bigoted, and horrifying, but had stopped just short of asking him to step down from the position he'd assumed less than 2 weeks earlier. Smith's call joins a rising chorus of city, county, and state elected officials who say the new commissioner should be removed from public office. In a written statement Wednesday, 11 state representatives and senators who represent parts of Clackamas County condemned Scholl's comments and urged him to immediately step down. The legislature said they condemned Scholl's disgraceful social media posts. "In a moment when too many give in to their hatred and deny facts, we've seen firsthand in Salem and in Washington, D.C. in recent weeks just how destructive this kind of language can be. Hatred like this has no place in our society. Rather, we must do all we can to collectively confront our past and to address the continued impact that systemic racism and bigotry have on immigrants and communities of color." Two Cambie City Councilors, Greg Parker and Sarah Spoon, signed on to separate statements with 24 other local elected officials of Clackamas County communities. "To those targeted by Commissioner Scholl, we stand with you and take seriously our job to provide equitable representation, protection, and service to every member of our communities," the mayors and the city councilors said in a statement, which also called for Scholl's immediate resignation. "We uphold our commitment to protect all of the people we represent and to speak out against racism, hate, bigotry, and other forms of intolerance that have no place in our society." John Wentworth, the newly elected district attorney of Clackamas County, also called on Scholl to resign. More than 20 Clackamas County department heads, including the sheriff, had signed a letter asking Scholl to step down. Scholl has faced scrutiny in recent days since Jennings Lodge resident Chris Waller published a blog post documenting dozens of Facebook posts from Scholl dating back to at least 2019, which contained Islamophobic, racist, and transphobic comments. A post from 2019, July, reads, "When you interact with a Muslim, you're being deceived. Period. End of sentence." "This is how it starts," he said in another post 13 months ago documenting the alleged Muslim invasion of the United Kingdom. "The way it ends is you and yours are dead. Not my idea. That would be the word from every imam and every ayatollah." Scholl has yet to resign. In response to threats received after Scholl's comments surfaced, the county postponed its swearing-in ceremony for commissioners, which was originally scheduled for Wednesday. In a statement to media outlets Monday, Scholl apologized for concern about his comments without disavowing the comments themselves. I apologize for any concerns in the community related to my comments years ago about problems with integration of Islam into Western society, he said. I respect the freedom of religion that extends to members of the Islamic community, as well as to all religious beliefs. He promised to work toward, quote, increasing understanding and cooperation amongst all new immigrants to our nation and to the county. Heavy rains deluged the western half of the state this week, causing flooding in parts of the Willamette Valley and the Canby area, including the Pudding and Clackamas Rivers and Johnson Creek. Power outages also affected thousands of households throughout the state Wednesday morning and into the afternoon, including upwards of 30,000 Clackamas County residents. At least 2,000 in Canby or south of town were affected, and even some traffic signals, like the light at Highway 99E and Barlow Road, stayed dark during the morning commute. A National Weather Service advisory Monday had predicted that heavy rains would pelt the area until early Wednesday morning, with 2 or 3 inches of accumulation expected in the Portland metro area alone. For comparison, weather officials advised Clackamas County to expect higher rain totals than those experienced during the storms of December 20th through January 1st, which indeed caused flooding, debris flows, and road closures in several areas. The ground is already saturated, so most of the rain will become surface runoff, NWS officials advised the fire district and other emergency management agencies in the area. The City of Canby and Canby Fire have set up a self-service sandbag station for those who need it near the maintenance shops on North Redwood Street off of Territorial Road. If you need an ark, however, you'll have to build it yourself. Just remember to bring the animals in 2x2. A Beaver Creek man, previously arrested for attempting to break into the Oregon State Capitol, is now charged with jumping a security fence at the Hatfield Federal Courthouse in Portland and firing 5 shots at the building. Cody Melby, 39, is a U.S. Army veteran of the Iraq War, a former Oregon National Guard member, and the owner of a window treatment store in Oregon City, according to a statement he posted to YouTube on January 5th, and his since-deactivated LinkedIn page. On January 6th, he participated in a Stop the Steal rally in Salem and was arrested by Oregon State Police after allegedly being seen attempting to access several doors at the Capitol. Troopers said he was taken into custody for trespassing while in possession of a firearm. 2 days later, Melby was allegedly at the federal courthouse in Portland, the center of a large and sometimes violent demonstrations that raged throughout the summer in protest of systemic racism and racially motivated violence at the hands of police. According to Billy J. Williams, U.S. Attorney for Oregon, Melby jumped a security fence that was a remnant of those nightly protests and fired several rounds into the building's exterior from a 9mm pistol. 2 courthouse security officers exited the building and approached Melby after observing him on a closed-circuit security camera at approximately 7:35 p.m. on Friday. According to the complaint filed in his case, Melby told the officers he had a gun, and the officers handcuffed him without further incident. Federal officers dispatched to the scene located 5 spent 9mm bullet casings, 3 spent bullets, 3 bullet holes in plywood affixed to the building's stone columns, and damage to the metal soffit above the building's main entrance. Melby made his first appearance in federal court Monday before a U.S. magistrate judge in Portland. In a January 5th YouTube video, which appears to have been taken in front of the Oregon State Capitol, Melby reads a statement advancing various conspiracy theories that Joe Biden's victory in the November presidential election was illegitimate and that the contest had been stolen from current President Donald Trump. At one point, he reads a lengthy list of federal, state, and local politicians and other officials, mainly Democrats or nonpartisan judges, he claims were part of the theft. The only way to effect nonpartisan detention of the traitors of our republic is we must utilize the military, Melby said. The Insurrection Act is now in play. President Trump set the conditions for this. He has said the word treason on his official Twitter. That's really all that's needed. In the video, Melby calmly advances a plan by which cells of military service members and veterans would operate domestically to detain American citizens, and he volunteers to head up the effort. I would lead these operations and would do so as a service to this country for free, he says. I make enough in my retirement to do so. I do not want any compensation from the taxpayers. The statement is the result of what Melby described as a year-long investigation into national security and election integrity. Oregon House Republican leader Christine Drazen of Canby released a statement Sunday critical of one of her own caucus members who, in a recently released security video, appeared to open a door to allow violent protesters to enter the closed state capitol building last month. In her statement, Drazen said that while she does not agree with the decision to close the capitol to the public, she has consistently condemned intimidation, violence, and destruction in the name of peaceful protests, regardless of the demonstrators' cause or political affiliation. The actions of Representative Mike Nierman, a Republican from Independence, who appeared to knowingly leave open a door for right-wing protesters to enter the Capitol and clash with police, led to an elevated risk for violence for the entire community, Drazen said. The melee with police which follows is difficult to watch without a profound sense of gratitude to the troopers who were able to prevent further violence that could have recklessly put more people in harm's way, she said. Drazen said Nierman's actions are under investigation. If the investigation finds that actions taken were criminal, legislatures are not above the law and will be held responsible, she said. Last week, Oregon Speaker of the House Representative Tina Kotek, Democrat from Portland, issued a statement calling for Nierman's resignation. Representative Nierman put every person in the Capitol in serious danger, Kotek said. As we tragically saw last week during the insurrection at the United States Capitol, the consequences could have been much worse had law enforcement not stepped in so quickly. His actions have created immense fear among legislators and Capitol staff. I believe he should resign immediately because he's already breached the public trust and endangered our ability to safely conduct the people's business. Kotek stripped Nierman of his committee assignments and rescinded his commission appointments, according to the statement. She is also invoicing him for $2,000 to cover the cost to fix the damage that resulted when he allowed the rioters to enter the Capitol vestibule. Kotek said she would join other House members in filing a formal conduct complaint with the Legislative Equity Office, alleging that Representative Nierman's actions have created a hostile work environment in the Capitol. Nierman read a statement on the House floor agreeing to immediate safety measures, including that he will not let any non-authorized personnel into the Capitol, will rescind his badge access to the Capitol, and will provide 24 hours notice before each time he comes to the building. This will allow notice to be provided to all Capitol occupants so they can adjust their plans if they do not feel safe working in the building while he is present, Kotek's statement said.
B14 068 N 7040.
Hey, Frankie, what are you doing?
Well, I was trying to win this direct link pattern bingo game. That Hallmark gift basket is as good as mine.
Direct link bingo game?
You bet. Our local internet provider is hosting a virtual bingo game to show appreciation for their members. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, super cool. Who does that?
Direct link does. They miss seeing their members during these difficult times and wanted to offer a fun way to stay engaged and win some sweet prizes.
They really do work hard to embody that cooperative spirit, don't they?
Well, October is Cooperative Month, and DirectLink is a cooperative that was started back in 1904 by local farmers, so bingo kind of makes sense. They are one of roughly 260 remaining communications co-ops in the U.S. who provide connections over 40% of the land so that more than 50 million rural Americans have the technology that they need to thrive.
Well, that's pretty unique. So how does bingo work?
DirectLink members were mailed a bingo card at the beginning of September. Simply visit directlink.coop/bingo or DirectLink Facebook page every weekday to get that day's bingo number and cross it off your card. They're playing four different simultaneous games, with the blackout prize being a four-pack of tickets to a 2021 Mariners game.
Okay, wow. Get out of my way. I gotta go get my card right now.
Good luck, you know, on everything except that Hallmark basket, because, like I said, that's mine. Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with honestly with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us on the Canby Conversation today are two officers and longtime members of the Canby Kiwanis Club. We have the current president, Angela Baker.
Hello.
And we're also joined by Luana Hill. She is a former president of the club and the current president of the Canby Kiwanis Foundation, which, Luana, you were telling us basically means that you get to take all the money that you guys raise and are able to kind of decide, do the fun part of the job and able to decide the things that goes toward in the community.
Yeah, that's about it. So
before we started recording, you guys were explaining to me how it all works with the officers for Canby Kiwanis Club. Basically, it's a multi-year process. You kind of start as vice president, and then it goes to president-elect, and then president. Angela, do you just feel so lucky that your year landed on the year of the coronavirus? Do you ever, go to the club members and be like, hey, I never signed up for all this?
It's a good time in my life for it to happen. So if it's going to happen, now's a good time.
So why don't you start, Angela, by telling us just a little bit about, I guess, what life has looked like for Canby Kiwanis Club over the past year, how the coronavirus has affected operations, and just kind of how you guys have made it through.
Yeah, I think we were able to pivot really fast when things hit in March. And I'm really proud of our club for being able to do that. Not many other clubs really jumped on the Zoom meeting in our district or internationally at all. So we are one of the first clubs to start meeting by Zoom. And because we have 30, 40 members, we ended up getting 20 to 25 to 30 members on the Zoom calls. So it really was the only change is we weren't eating lunch together at Thriftway and or at Cutsforce Market. And, we still have the fellowship and the dedication to the community continuing so that these programs don't stop. I think the biggest change, though, was that we weren't able to do the Kitty Caper Parade this last summer. So that was the largest change. And we were able to modify the Kiwanis Canby Community Food and Toy Drive to make sure that continued.
Well, I'd love to come back here in a little bit and talk more about the Kitty Caper Parade, because I know that that's such a big part of what Canby Kiwanis does. And Angela, you personally have been a really big supporter of that for a long time, I know, and really enjoyed that piece. But before we go there, I'd love to hear just a little more about that earlier transition to the Zoom meetings and maybe a little bit more about what that looked like. I remember thinking back, all those months ago where we all kind of got this virtual life thrown on us and that it was a little bit maybe more of a jarring transition for some. But I know particularly for folks that are maybe a little bit older or more technology averse, obviously present company very much excluded, but I know maybe some members of Kiwanis might have fallen into that group. Was that a challenge at all or something that you guys dealt with, and what did that really look like?
Yeah, everybody really jumped on board with it right away. I was surprised how many people were able to log on and figure Zoom out when I was still figuring it out, and I feel very proficient with technology. And so we didn't lose too many people to that. Of course, there is some that we miss dearly that are not able to log on, but we're able to keep up with them through emails and notes and our newsletters, an amazing newsletter. So they're keeping up with what's going on and able to volunteer when there's to volunteer for and being updated on it. But we're getting a good amount of members coming into the club. One of the fun things that we're doing is because the noon club is not accessible to everybody. Maybe if you're working full-time and don't have a full hour lunch, or you're stay at home and you got to make your kids lunch at noon, we're doing an evening meeting once a month now, and that'll start tonight actually for the first time. So
Luana, I'd love to hear from you kind of what you thought as far as why the club felt it was so important to keep that aspect of the organization alive. Why did you work so hard to implement that Zoom meetings, even though, you know, it's not necessarily anyone's ideal way to run a civic club?
I felt really strongly that if we didn't get on Zoom right away and keep people pulled together, that we would just lose our club. I think, especially now that, and I'm glad we did, because when you look at how long this has gone on, I would never have thought that we'd be spending almost a year on Zoom. But I can't say that people love it. I mean, anyone would rather be meeting in person, but it has really helped a lot. And actually, we have 66 members now, and I think it's great that we have about between 25 and 30 each week who managed to come on. We even have like Jan Weeks, who is at Hope Village and doesn't have access to a computer, phones one of our members who does, and she listens to the meetings on her phone. And so that to me is just that shows how much people want that connection.
I agree. I think it would have been detrimental to the community if we didn't continue these meetings as well. Kiwanis is a foundation of several of the services that go on in our community. And so if we, you know, had a way that we couldn't get together, then I don't know what would have happened to some of the services that we provide.
Well, I really love hearing about that. And, it is so important for really any organization to maintain that that sense of connection and that closeness any way that you can amid the pandemic and the regulations and all that stuff. But obviously, that's something that maybe is a little more behind the scenes, the meetings for club members. One thing that I know is very beloved and very visible in the community that you guys do is the Kiwanis Thrift Store there on Highway 99E. And Lou, I know you've been really involved with that. Can you tell us a little bit about that process when the store reopened after 10 weeks, which was the longest time it's ever been closed in its 70-year history, the lift that was to implement the new regulations to try to keep staff and really everybody safe through that store?
Well, I have to really hand it to our store manager, Alicia. She is just amazing, and she has such a great staff, and she works so well with them. And I really give all the credit for us coming back to her, because she actually worked during the whole, 10 weeks that we were closed. She worked at the store and did a lot of improvements and a lot of changes, so that when we were able to reopen, we came back better than ever. And I think that because of her and her good management, we were able to kind of weather that storm. And we actually pretty much made our budget last year, which I think is amazing for having been closed for 10 weeks. But this is a setback now to be closed for one of our employees tested positive for COVID. And they didn't have a lot of exposure to the public, but I'm sure that people were concerned. We did have several people ask, like, what day was this? And I was there on this day, and were they there that day? And, you know, I would be concerned too. I mean, I think we all are being very cautious, and we just, we could have kept the store open, but we felt like it was really important to just take a pause and make sure everyone was okay. Everyone, the employees were being tested yesterday and they'll have their results back in a couple of days. So we just want the community to be safe, and we will weather this storm. I think we're lucky. We obviously don't pay a lot for our products because they're donated to us, and that, you know, we have such a generous community. So our expenses are our salaries and maintenance for the building. So we're not in the same position that a lot of businesses are in, where they're having to lay off people or they're in danger of closing. So we feel like we can be here for the community, and we're really grateful for that.
Yeah, I love the thrift store. I love how much the community loves and supports it. I love driving by on Thursdays and seeing that line out the door, you know, spaced out now and on the bubbles and everything. And part of that is just because of the capacity requirements now, but obviously Thursday being the half price sale. Yeah, I love what you guys do there, that you're able to support your operations and the things that you do through the community there, and that you just find new value in things amid our throwaway culture. You guys are kind of countercultural to that, and I really appreciate that. So moving into something that is a little more sad, maybe, that obviously I know you guys weren't happy about. Nobody was really happy that this had to go away this year. But the Kitty Caper Parade, which also has a history in the community dating back to more than 70 years. Is that right, Angela?
That we've done the Kitty Caper Parade since about 1948. Every year we have been the parade that opens up the fairgrounds. So that's the intent of the Kitty Caper Parade. It's a celebration of our community, and as well as opening up the fair on the first day of the fair. So you start out at night school, everybody dresses in costume and has their bikes decorated and floats, and we make our way as a community to support the fair. So it's been a great thing for, I mean, I remember it's my childhood participating in it.
Yeah, we did it, the Kitty Caper Parade, me and my crew, back in 2019, the last year that we were able to do it. And yeah, it's so fun. It's such a great community event. I can't wait for it to come back and we can do it again. But it is one of those things. I mean, amid COVID, there were you know, some parades that were done, definitely some drive-by things, but the Kitty Caper Parade, it's all kids. They don't drive much, right? They're all on bikes and wagons and on foot, and it's just this huge mass of people, and it was one of those things that really just couldn't work amid the pandemic.
No, we were able to pivot, though, and what we had decided the year before was to get our Grand Marshal for the parade. We wanted to celebrate the children because that's what Kiwan is all about. I mean, we're really just about being passionate about helping children grow and succeed. And so we wanted the Grand Marshals of the parade to be children in our community. So we started the Awesome Kids Award, and those people who did the Awesome Kid, who got that award, would be the Grand Marshals. So we continued with that program, and we had some wonderful kids be our Awesome Kids for that time. And we advertised that, as well as a little slideshow of the parades in the past.
Yeah. That's cool. And that Awesome Kids piece, is that something that you'll still continue to do in years to come?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that that's what it is. We've had lots of Grand Marshals over the year. There's been celebrities that have come out. It's been, seniors in the community who have dedicated their lives to helping the children in the community. But I really personally love that we're all about the kids. So this parade should be about the kids and have some great kids up there.
So obviously another really huge thing that you guys do that's so important to the community and so visible just happened. It was a community food and toy drive, which went, you know, really all things considered, not all that different from years past. Probably the biggest change being the loss of the food boxes and doing grocery cards instead, but still hundreds of kids in our community that got really cool new toys for Christmas, and lots of families that were able to get special dinners and food that maybe they might not have had otherwise. We have done, you know, definitely check out our website, canbefirst.com. We did a lot of stories before and after that event this year, kind of showing how things would have to change and the impact that it still managed to make. I would love to hear from you both just what it was like to be part of that this year, even and I guess how it felt to still be able to do that for the community, even with some of the changes that were required because of COVID.
This was my first year really being involved. So it was eye-opening. And the fact that we usually run that with, you know, 20 volunteers at one time, at least on different days, there's 20, 25 volunteers really running through organizing this. We were a crew of three coordinating it, and then maybe up to seven people there the day that we were giving toys and the food cards away. And so it was stressful, I'm not gonna lie, but we are
and
so
cold.
Glad. And cold.
Very cold.
It was so cold and rainy, but we made it through. And really, we just did not want to see this go away. And we could not have done it without the community, for sure. The community showed up this year. Between the city grant of $15,000 that we were able to procure from them, and the amount of toys and donations that are still rolling in, actually, in the name of the Food and Toy Drive. So it was a great year. We got through, and it just is going to get better and better.
Yeah, and again, Angela, your timing is just impeccable for this to be your first year, the year that you decided to jump into the community toy drive. I remember we were out there that day taking photos and whatnot, and one thing that I just remember so clearly was that that lineup of like just like 40 McDonald's coffee cups on the counter, just lined up, hot and ready to go. Felt like, yeah, these people know what's up. They've done this before.
It's a well-oiled machine, thanks to people like Luana and Todd Gary and Sharon Schneider. Sharon's been our coordinator of this for I don't know how many years. It's well-oiled machine. There's just, you just step into the roles that they've already put out. And we have Lori and Anne, and I'm missing someone. Lori and Anne, and they, you know, have coordinated the toy section of it for years. And they have a system, and that system works.
Cool. Well, you know, it's January, obviously, time for a little bit of reflection. I don't know if you guys have had time to breathe over the past 10 or 11 months, but if you did have time, is there anything in your times of reflection or when you sort of look back, maybe a word that you would use to describe the past year of Canby Kiwanis Club, or maybe a moment that stands out, anything like that?
Resilient.
Yep. I would say growth. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I think we've learned so much, and we're able to, like Luana said, we were resilient. We figured out ways to do it. And I think that's only going to help the club grow in the future, having to look at different ways to do things that we've always done in the past a certain way. So.
Cool. Well, it has been really wonderful to speak with you both, but we're almost out of time here. Is there anything that either of you would like to add before you go?
I'm just glad that we have Angela leading us right now. I think it's great to have some fresh blood, some young blood. And I don't want us to ever become a group that says, but we've always done it this way. You know, I want us to be a group that tries new things and is willing to entertain new ideas. So, she couldn't have come up at a more perfect time. We all really enjoy working with her.
That's cool. And well, I agree that Angela is awesome. I don't know about you, but I am definitely ready to go back to boring for a little while.
Yeah.
I don't need to do any more new stuff for at least a few months. Angela, what about you? Anything to add?
I would just say I'm really looking for the kids when it is safe to come back to school, that we're looking for our service clubs to start up again. We have a wonderful club at the Baker Prairie Middle School called the Builders Club. It's a leadership program there. And we have a key club at the high school level and a leadership program as well for them. And we've missed working with the kids. So when it is safe, we are just looking forward to doing that one-on-one with the kids again.
Awesome. Well, the Canby Kiwanis Club, you can find out more about them on Facebook. You can also find the Canby Kiwanis Thrift Store on Facebook and Instagram. They are actually a great follow on Instagram. Or at canbykiwanis.org if you'd like to learn more about the club, the things that they do, and ways that you can plug in and support them if you like. Thank you, Luana and Angela, so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tyler.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.